That was City of Roses by Esperanza Spalding. My name is Joe, and this is AM 1450 KBPS, KBBS Portland. Today, I have a really special guest with me today, AJ McCreary.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really fun, especially as somebody who graduated from Benson High School. It's an honor to be back in this space with y'all.
Thank you. It's so nice to have you here. We're going to do like a quick on-air interview with you.
All right.
So let's just dive right into it. So let's start with your name. What are people going to know you for? If they hear the name AJ McCreary, what goes through their head?
Yeah, so AJ McCreary, I am from Portland. I am a light-skinned black solo mama who is deeply invested in mutual aid and the arts here in Portland. People know me a lot from Equitable Giving Circle. I am one of the co-founders and executive director. It is a reparations-based organization here in town. We started in March of 2020. We do food justice, housing initiatives, and community wellness. And what that looks like in real time is we feed over 375 families a week through our food justice program, our CSA, which is a home delivery, and then our weekly pantry that happens on Thursdays at MLK in Alberta. We feed tons of folks. Fresh produce that we buy from black and brown farmers locally, and then other items we sourced from, like in-kind donations from local businesses and different food entities. Our housing, we're still working on really fully developing this program. We put $200,000 out into the community in 3 month rent and mortgage relief grants, served about 60 households in the end of 2020. And we are looking for more dollars so that we can really fully expand that housing program to do more of those grants, as well as hopefully at some point realize having our own building where we can help house black single mothers of all ages. And so that's something we're working on. And then our community wellness is large-scale events and monthly education series, which is online, and then our events, like we just had our Earth Day event, and we have a mother's event coming up next weekend. So those are things people know me for. They also know me for Mom Block. I'm one of the co-founders and on the leadership team of Mom Block, which is a true mutual aid group here in town. We serve really black and brown mothers, particularly single mothers across the metro area, just with food, emergency relief for different reasons. We've helped a lot of DV victims, the fires, the heat wave, the ice storms. We've done a lot of work. So people know me for that. They also know me through STEPS, PDX, and Race Talks, which are two boards I'm on, and I've worked closely with the Mayo House and some other places. So folks know me around town for being a busybody, doing all of the things around community care. When people think about community care, they definitely think about my name.
That's pretty cool. Thanks, AJ.
Yeah.
So moving on to our next question. I was out front of the school when you arrived here, but for our listeners, how did you like physically get to Benson? You took the MAX?
Today I took a Lyft. I actually moved yesterday. My day is a little frazzled, just trying to get settled. I'm now living in Northwest Portland, and so I took the, not the MAX, I took the a Lyft out here. But I'm a person that doesn't drive. I was T-boned twice in a span of 8 months a couple years ago, and I quit driving after that. And so I rely on public transit, ride shares, carpooling, or walking. I'm not much of a biker personally, mainly because cars make me so nervous. So I mostly rely on my legs.
Yeah, thank you. You sort of led us right into that next question, mm-hmm. and I totally get you for the car things. I just started learning driving. Ooh,
it's scary. Well,
know.
Good luck.
Thank you.
It's exciting and scary. I'm sure the grown-ups in your life are excited and terrified.
Yeah, I went on the freeway and it's like gripping that steering wheel really hard. But well,
I don't miss driving.
Yeah, I totally get that. So, what are your? You already said like you're not a car person, mm-hmm. but like public transportation. Would you like if you were elected as like commissioner? Would you like plan to expand the like infrastructure and public transportation areas that Portland has under its controls, or do you have
absolutely? I'm actually super radical about this. I think that we should bring back fareless transit. When I was in high school, I graduated in 20 in 2003, when, and Benson's, you know, over in Northeast Portland and currently being renovated, there was Fairless Transit. It was Fairless Square that was downtown, and it came over into Northeast Portland. I think right there at the Lloyd Center was the last stop. And it was really great. It definitely helped incentivize ridership. And right now with TriMet being, the ridership being down about 57% since COVID, we're really going to have to do our work, like real good solid work, in getting people confident and comfortable riding, and also making riding more accessible and making sure that the routes are really connecting. Right now, the way that TriMet operates is you got to really go downtown, then go back out if you want to get across town or go anywhere. And as somebody who has, you know, ridden the bus and the MAX for years, it's frustrating because it adds so much time. We should be having better ways of getting from neighborhood to neighbor in the outer parts of Portland, or that you could cut across neighborhoods and not always having to go down and then back out. If you're going from like North Portland to Selwood, sure, that makes sense to kind of go through city center, but a lot of the ways it doesn't. So as a commissioner, I want to champion the different ways that we can utilize public transit, that we can make it more accessible, working with Metro, you know, particularly around that, because that's who controls most of TriMet. But really excited to intentionally grow that ridership. That's one of the things that Portland was known for, and it's something that we've really fallen off, and it's something that we should definitely get back on champion. And it's important. The public transit is important in the conversation around the environment.
Yes, so much. The, like, with all those cars just, like, belching out exhaust fumes.
And freeways are dirty.
Oh, yeah. And then they cut, like, right through the city. And that's, it's quite the thing freeways are. And it's, are you excited for the upcoming Division Transit project by TriMet?
Yeah.
Yeah, the bendy buses are so cool. It's,
yeah. I mean, sometimes I wonder, like, if these are the things, like, just what we're focusing on. So it's like I'm excited, but also, like, was this the exact prior? Like, and I don't know, per se, because it's like I'm not in that space. So, but I am excited for any ways that we're moving forward in public transit. I'm going to get excited about it.
Of course. And I, as a person who doesn't have a car, am right alongside you with being excited for new transit. So, moving on to our next little question, smidge. So, previously, like on your website and such, you stated that you are opposed to expanding the Portland Police Bureau.
Mm-hmm.
And you would prefer to move resources from the PPB over to the Portland Street Response to handle what you call the root issues of things like gun violence. What are the root issues that you would say for those things? And is Portland Street Response equipped to handle them?
Well, Portland Street Response isn't going to handle all of the things, but what it is going to do is allow us to have folks who are equipped to deal with non-violent situations come out. So people that are having a mental health crisis or different kinds of disputes, there's an opportunity to have folks that are showing up who are more equipped for de-escalation, and there's a lot of value in that. I am opposed to funding more police. Right now we have an issue with the police where nobody wants to work for the police. We're having a hard time retaining officers and hiring officers. So if any other industry was having this kind of an issue hiring and retaining people, and this kind of data response of like what they're doing and what's happening, we would be having to make pivots. And so I just don't understand as an individual why we're doubling down in an industry that is, it's a dying industry. We need something. We do need community support. But does it have to look like the police? How come we can't grow out of, and how come we can't move forward? How can we can't evolve in this way? So I do want to invest more in Portland Street Response. It's now going to be a 24-hour service. It's citywide now, which is really great. These are things that Joanne Hardesty has worked really hard in the short time that she's been on city council. And I can't wait for her to keep on expanding this work. So I'm really excited to, you know, invest more into that. I also know that well-resourced communities are safe communities. And Portland has not been a well-resourced community for community members in a long time. When I say community members, I mean the folks in this room, these young folks, our students, your parents, your grandparents, your aunts, your uncles, your neighbors, the people that work in shops, the folks that are moving, all of the different moving parts of Portland, I'm talking about those when I'm talking about the community. So investing in people, making sure that families have resources, food, housing, access to transportation, childcare, medical help, medical services, you know, mental health services. Those are the things that make communities safer. Those are the things that address gun violence. And until we start investing in people, we're not going to see these things change. So I am very much excited to use this platform and this position as a way to make sure that we're investing in community, building out relationships with community-based organizations who do a lot of the work, and kind of making sure that we're getting to those root issues, because that's how we're going to move this forward.
Perfect. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So real quick for my little last question here, you told us you're a Benson graduate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You graduated 2003?
I graduated in 2003. I was in the architecture program.
That's pretty cool. What was it like back then? Like, are you...
What was it like? Goodness. I really did love my time at Benson. I was in the architecture program. I feel like we had a lot of freedom. We were pushed really hard to, you know, to learn the techniques, but also be creative. I'm really grateful for that time. It really taught me a lot about space and placemaking. I have tons of sketches still from drawing all of the buildings right in northeast Portland, North Portland where I grew up, and southeast, right, because Benson's right real close to southeast. You know, I feel like the teachers and the space that I was in at Benson was very collaborative and very, you know, the students at Benson come from all over the city, so you kind of get a touch points in different ways with people from all over the city and our teachers. And I think it's still very true of Benson teachers, and probably most PPS teachers in general, are they care deeply. I actually just ran into a teacher from way back when at New Seasons the other day. It was like 9 o'clock at night. This was just after a neighborhood association meeting, and he was like, oh my gosh, you're running for city council. And we had this whole moment, and I was like, do you really remember me? Like, of all of the thousands of students. And he was like, absolutely, of course. And it was a lovely, wholesome moment on the campaign trail, and just also for me a reminder of like what amazing people helped shape me. And you know, I'm definitely proud of being a Benson grad, and it's one of the reasons why I'm always still pushing back at PPS to do right by our students and do right by our educators and do right by our community.
Cool. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So I was just about to hand it off to my partner, but yeah. You said those two words right there, neighborhood association. And that perked my ears up, because you don't know this, but I actually was a youth representative for the Rose City Park Neighborhood Association.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I actually worked a lot with them. I don't anymore, but what are your views on, like, neighborhood associations in general or community-based, like, boards to represent their community to the city?
Well, I grew up hanging out in the North Portland Neighborhood Association office, because it used to be in, I don't know where it is now. It used to be in the old North Portland Library on Lombard in my dad's office. My dad was an insurance agent. He's since retired, but his office was there across the hall. And I spent many hours looking at the old maps and all of the different kind of documents that they had, and always asking way too many questions of the women that worked there. And I'm sure there was men folk that worked there too, but I only remember ever engaging with the ladies. And they were just really lovely people and very informative. So I have fond memories of neighborhood association. I think that we could activate our neighborhood associations in a better way. I think that that's a great opportunity to make sure that our neighborhood associations are helping get information out, and part of the consistency in getting information out, and building community relationships. So I think that there is a great infrastructure that we have, and I think there are ways that we can engage a little more intentionally to really build those relationships, both with community members, the associations themselves, and overall be, you know, that be a beacon for information to our community. Something that a lot of folks talk about, I've been talking about this for years, is that the way that City Hall gets information, this is also a metro issue, so this is not an attack on anybody, but we've got to modernize the way that we're sharing information and being consistent with information. And neighborhood associations are an opportunity to do that. And each neighborhood association does things slightly different. And many of them have really great programming. Beaumont Neighborhood Association, they still pass out quarterly newsletters that have tons of information. They do it all by hand. And so there's definitely things, you know, in the spaces that we can take and maybe get other neighborhoods to work on or adapt. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there in terms of making sure that we're building relationships with our community and getting information out consistently.
Okay, thank you. I do not want to take any more time from my on-air partner. So up next with their own set of questions, it's DJ Vinny right after these messages.
Hey, it's me, your cell phone. We need to talk about something serious. I know you love me. I know you like using me wherever you are, but I feel like this isn't working out when you're driving. I know you may think that it's possible to focus both on me and the road, but I just don't feel the same way. I think we should spend time away from each other when you're driving. It's for the best.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
All right, welcome back on air to KVPS. We're interviewing AJ McCreary, candidate for city commissioner.
Yep. Seat number two.
Seat number two. Let's go.
All right.
So you were born and raised in Portland, right?
Yep.
You've talked about being a child of the community. What's that like? What does that mean?
Yeah, I was raised by, you know, I have my parents are here in Portland, but I definitely was raised and have a lot of influence by aunties and other community members, folks that have helped helped me along my way, both with education, with resources, with just encouragement. I was part of La Femme's Debutantes, which is a finishing program that supports young Black girls in high school, and really the goal is to get them to go to college. So like Miss Renee was somebody who really supported and encouraged me a lot in that space. So many people, I mean, Keen Tolton Davis is somebody, she also went to Benson, who, you know, and that's the space I've connected with, and she's been a friend and mentor of mine since I was a teenager. So really it's that I really acknowledge that it's not just that my parents or my intimate family is the people that shape me, but that our community really has raised me up and helped me become the person I am. And it's very much, this is the community that's also inspired me to give back, because this community has given me so much.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of communities that have shaped you, you've moved back and forth a lot between Portland and New Orleans. How's that?
Well, I started college in New Orleans, and then I came back, and then I moved down there later again with my son when he was like 6, 7. So I've been down there two different times, like two different stints of living down there. It's my second home. It's a place that is, it's a very joyful place. I think there's a lot of similarities in Portland, just in terms of the serious, you know, wage gaps, a lot of the oppression that is down there, some of it is mirrored up here. And then we have like Vanport. When Katrina happened, it was just sort of like Vanport all over. So if people aren't familiar with Vanport, it's when, which was a Black, you know, Black town, right there on the Columbia River, sort of where Hayden Meadows is now, Delta Park. That area was all Black, and it flooded. There's a lot of similarities, I'd say, in between what's happened in Portland and to our community and now what's happening in New Orleans. But New Orleans is just, it's a place that has definitely inspired me to be joyful, to lean into community, to trust community, to show up. Yeah, it's my second home, and I really do love the heat. It's rainy there, too, so it's like home, but warm rain.
Warm rain, yeah, it's nice. I've heard good things about New Orleans. Mm-hmm. You talked about getting your formal education down there. Mm-hmm. Your education is in Black history, not political science.
Yeah, right? Actually, so I started down there at Xavier, and then I transferred up here, and I had a baby in college. Had my son when I was 21, and then I took some time off. Well, I went right back to school, but then I took some time off a little bit later, and then I did go back to finish. I don't have my my diploma, I guess my degree, because I owe University of Portland some money, student loans. So I finished my coursework up here at University of Portland, and I was in Black History, which was really complex in studying up here. I actually took a bunch of classes at PSU and PCC and just kind of bounced around to grab all of those different credits necessary. I think it's really important to be educated. I also personally have sort of rejected some of that formal stuff in a lot of my decolonizing work. Do I really want to have validation from people or entities that I don't register, you know, that I don't really vibe with, that are racist, that are harmful? So, yes to formal education. I don't know how much I feel about it from, you know, racist institutions.
All right. Well, I mean, you talk about decolonizing, kind of separating yourself from that formal education. That's also a process you continued with your child. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think the decolonizing process is a forever process. It's a forever activity. It's very intentional. It's sort of acknowledging harm and addressing it in real time. It's pushing back. It's speaking up. It is even really dissecting the different ways that we uphold white supremacy culture. We live in a white supremacy, you know, society. These are the norms. People don't necessarily mean to be racist, and they can still be being racist because we are all upholding white supremacy norms within this culture. So it's really acknowledging that and pushing back and trying to actively, intentionally be thoughtful and move through that. And I've done that a lot with my own kid. I pulled my kid out of school when he was 10 because of racism, because of a lot of harm that happened at the schools he was at. He was in PPS. And there wasn't any support. It was a moment when Portland didn't have a superintendent, and things were just like, who do you go to when you're like in crisis and there doesn't seem like anybody's in charge? I've stayed active within PPS as an advocate, going to, you know, the school board meetings, pushing back, writing letters, all the things. And that's very much important to me because my kid cannot thrive without his peers also thriving. Mm-hmm. But in that moment, it was critical for us to, for his own safety and for his own well-being, to figure something else out. And that really has pushed us a lot in our own, you know, familiar part of decolonizing and thinking about things and moving through things. And in that, we've been able to lean in a lot into the arts, community care. He is a ballet dancer. He is a very accomplished ballet dancer. He dances at Steps PDX. Pre-COVID, we were trying to go to Dance Theater of Harlem. He's supposed to go there for the summer on scholarship. He has an opportunity in Norway we're waiting on for COVID to chill out so we can travel. So he's very accomplished. Like, he studied at San Francisco Ballet, Nashville Ballet. He's a well-accomplished artist. He's had over 26 shows here in town, most of them being solo shows. And some pretty big names, including, you know, the Five, as well as the Armory. So, and Aura Gallery. Yeah, it's been pretty magical. And leaving school and really focusing on other things was what was really opened the door for a lot of his art. He takes music class at Ethos. He works with Albina Vision Trust, Meyer Memorial Fund, Race Talks. He's their youngest facilitator. He's been a facilitator since he was 12.
Oh, wow.
You know, teaching people and helping people move through those hard conversations. He actually currently has a development job at a philanthropic company called AP & Co. And so he is doing development work just like his mama. Yeah, so he's, you know, really us kind of coming out of that system that wasn't working for us and finding a path that did really has allowed him to flourish. And it's also just been really beautiful as a mom and a person to watch and participate in. And it's really also even pushed my own understanding of education, one that there's so many ways for people to learn, whether they're young or old. And there's so much beauty in leaning into community to grow. It's like, it's amazing as Benson has so many hands-on, like, coursework. You know, this right here, the fact that y'all get to do this, like, real time, you're on the radio, you're learning. when my kid was 10, there weren't those opportunities for him, so I made them for him. But it's just like, can we get all students, you know, access to different kinds of programming where they get to learn in real time and get that real life experience? And also get to use their voices in different ways, because our young people have so much knowledge and they have an ideas of how we should be moving for the future. And for me, getting to like do this journey with my kid has really gotten like just sort of really solidify those things and to see that in a different way.
Okay. You talk about how he's done some philanthropy work. Mm-hmm. He does a lot of art stuff, but that's not all that he does. He also has done some work with you.
Yeah.
And it recently came out in a Willamette Weekly article that you paid him about $3,000 from your campaign funds.
I paid him $3,200, and I got quite the deal. Quite the deal.
Quite the deal? Can you tell us about what
he's done? Yeah. My son, Hobbs, who's 15, has built and managed the website for the campaign. He built it really fast. If I was going to have went with, which, and I'm not the only person he's built a website for, by the way. This wasn't his first time building a website for somebody.
Uh-huh.
But if I had hired somebody, it was going to take weeks. I jumped in the race January 6th, and I needed a website really fast, and my kid was like, I got you, moms. Just probably like every student, every 15 to 20-year-old is probably much more capable of being like, hey, mom, I can help with that activity. I got you. Especially with tech or, you know, whatever. So he built the website. He's been sending out email communications. I have a bunch of lists that we send out communications to. He's done a bunch of research, helped with a bunch of different policy sort of planning. He's also helped with some events. He's, you know, he's been extremely valuable on this campaign. He's not the only youth that I'm paying, so... Get your panties together. I'm also paying Danny Cage, who's another youth activist in town. And these are not, this is not, that article was written as if I had just, I don't know, found unqualified people who've never done anything, which one is disrespectful to young people, to youth, to teenagers, because quite smart, quite capable. And two, these are two, you know, two youth activists who have done work in all kinds of places. I mean, Hobbs also works for or works on the CRC with Portland Public Schools. He's part of that budget committee. You know, these are very, very intelligent young people that are very capable. So, yes, I paid my child $3,200 to all of the work that he has done on this campaign. It's probably he's, you know, given tens of thousands of dollars worth of labor. And I paid him $3,200.
Sounds like you got a great deal out of it.
I got a great deal. I feel like, I mean, if there was any article that should have been, it should have been like, ooh, this chick ripped her own kid off. She, you know, got all this labor out of him. And and I say, like, Danny and Hobbs have, like, really showed up on this campaign. They've made phone calls. They've made connections. They've done research. I mean, Hobbs is really holding it down with the, you know, the website and a lot of tech stuff, because I'll just be like, I don't know what I'm doing. They've canvassed, you know, they're really doing this work. And I think that more candidates should be hiring young people, youth, teenagers, legit teenagers, you know, because our teenagers are incredibly smart. And really, honestly, one of my favorite parts about this whole journey, I think a lot more people could lean into that knowledge and that these experiences. Yes, they're fresh experiences. It's new. But I don't know if you ever slept in new sheets. It's pretty great. You know, like it's new things can be wonderful. New ideas, new energy. And I get a lot of my energy from working with young people. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of magic in that.
That's great. Moving away from young people for a little bit and back to you. we got a little sidetracked there. Joe earlier was talking to you about public transportation.
Yeah.
What other policies do you think are really important?
Well, I think championing Portland Clean Energy Fund is critical. I think there's a lot of noise right now in town to try to squash it and to move those funds. That was never anticipated to be such a big pool of money.
Mm-hmm.
And now folks are wanting to move, oh, it's too much, and saying very racist things like black and brown organizations don't have the infrastructure and the experience to handle large amounts of money. Mm-hmm. Really, with it being such a large pool of money, we have more opportunity to work with more organizations and do more work. Now, these organizations are getting hundreds of millions of dollars. It's, you know, getting like $1 million or a couple million dollars over a course of 2 to 5 years. So I think really championing that and really making sure that we keep that moving is critical. Portland Street Response is another policy that it's like, I mean, currently active, that's really critical. I think that there are some things within our housing program that we can lean into, particularly if this is not something the city of Portland's leaning into yet, and I hope that we get there, is leaning into the 3,000 challenge. And so that's to help get 3,000 people housed with some of the many empty units in town. Mm-hmm. Right now, for every one unhoused person, there are 2 empty units. So we need to be working with developers and landlords and getting people into those units. And when we're talking about that particular plan, it's not saying that we want to get folks that are, we don't just throw people into housing and just call it a day. It's bringing wraparound services to them, but also like with it for the first 3,000, there's definitely elders, multi-generational households, folks with children who need housing, who are not facing active addiction, who are not in a mental health crisis where they can't function in an inside place. So really working on the housing stuff, you know, there is a lot of noise around the Safe Rest Villages, which is a 2-year project. These spaces are outside, away from services. It's really just a very expensive, fancy outside. Mm-hmm. I think that there's, you know, the opportunity to kind of reshift some of that and to be really intentional about long-term solutions. So those are some of the things that I'm thinking about. I'm also really thinking about the environment, and particularly, you know, the Zenith Project was only shut down by the incumbent when community members really went hard on that. And so I really think it's important that anybody who's in the seat is thinking about the environment before there's any pressure, that that's something that comes natural to them. And then, you know, another big thing for me is really thinking about these highway expansions. Well, yes, we need to upgrade the I-5 bridge, but that doesn't mean we also need to expand the freeway. Mm-hmm. Expanding the freeway is going to harm, I mean, just the I-5 one will completely decimate Harriet Tubman, and it's also just going to create more carbon emissions. As somebody who's lived next to the freeway, more freeway is not a great idea. Like, it's disgusting. It's really unsafe, and it's going to create more harm and not less harm. And so we've got to be thinking about that. So those are just a few things that I'm thinking about.
And a lot of this is from your own boots in the ground experience, right? Mm-hmm. That's how you've learned about these things.
Yeah, reading, talking to people. You know, in my work in community, I talk to so many people all the time. Like, that's a big part of my job. And to talk to different stakeholders and different folks in different spaces, different demographics, and work with people. And interesting enough, more Portlanders want things like our policy to be centered around compassion care. This is a sanctuary city, so people really do want those things to be upheld. And this is also a place that has championed the environment and has said that, right? Like, mm-hmm. we are an environmental city. Well, why doesn't it look like that outside? Why aren't we actually doing those things in practice? So I've learned a lot just from, you know, from work, from reading, from volunteering, and excited to, yeah, be in this space and to make some intentional change.
All right. I think that's about all the questions we have for you today.
Sweet.
Thank you so much for coming into the studio.
Yeah.
It's been great to have you.
Thank you for having me. This is really cool. Like, it's not every day that you get to be interviewed by students at your old high school, and it's exciting that this program is still going.
All right. Yeah. Awesome. Start.
To protect her home and family in a disaster, Karen was willing to wade through water, mud, and insurance paperwork.
Yeah, I can do this.
You go, Karen. By simply understanding and updating what her insurance covers and doesn't cover now, she'll be better prepared no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
This has been an interview with AJ McCreary on AM 1450 KBPS. I would like to thank AJ so much for being here. It is such an amazing opportunity to be able to interview people who are running for city commissioner. Well, that's all for now. We're going to return to our normal broadcasting now. Up next, Leslie Gore with It's My Party.